For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Governor Spanberger wants next year's legal cannabis market to begin in July, not January. That's one of the bills she amended before her signing deadline, Monday. An early report shows that the early April cold snap severely damaged apple and peach crops in the Winchester area. And we launch our four-part series on Virginia's redistricting vote and conversations with some of the candidates affected. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, April 14th. Governor Abigail Spanberger acted on hundreds of bills in the last day before yesterday's 11:59 p.m. deadline. Jad Khalil with VPM News reports.
A lot of the amendments that Spanberger sent were not available for VPM News to review early Tuesday. But here's a few things we do know. Spanberger wants a retail cannabis market to start in July 2027 rather than January. She also vetoed a few criminal justice reform bills. One banned a practice where defendants, mostly of color, sign away their Fourth Amendment rights. Collective bargaining for state and local employees saw a lot of debate this legislative session. Spanberger's changes to that weren't immediately available, but it appears that she didn't extend the new labor rights to university faculty, who the legislature excluded. We'll see if lawmakers accept some of the more moderate positions Spanberger took. They'll consider them on April 22nd.
Jad Khalil reporting. As we reported yesterday, Governor Spanberger has signed some of the many gun bills that legislators sent to her desk during the 2026 legislative session. And advocates are celebrating. Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner reports.
Thanks to Governor Spanberger's signature, Virginia will soon have new limits on firearms, a move celebrated by Emma Brown with the gun violence prevention group Giffords.
Governor Spanberger ran on reducing gun crime. She has delivered on that promise, getting these bills over the finish line, creating a safer Virginia for families, for law enforcement, for communities across the Commonwealth.
One of the bills Spanberger signed would close the so-called boyfriend loophole in Virginia's domestic violence law. It allows the court to take firearms from someone convicted of domestic violence. Currently, the law is limited to spouses and family members, but under the new measure introduced by Fairfax Senator Russet Perry, the law will be expanded to include those in romantic relationships.
Domestic violence, whenever a firearm is introduced, the rate of homicide goes off the charts. This is just filling in that loophole for those folks who are not married but are in those intimate relationships that we can protect them too.
Another effort seeks to hold gun retailers and manufacturers liable if they act irresponsibly, think selling a gun to someone who shouldn't have it. Similar laws have survived legal challenges in northern states, but Second Amendment advocates like Republican Minority Leader Delegate Terry Kilgore said in a statement the new measure violates federal law. Taxpayers will be out hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in legal fees, and the law won't ever come into effect, Kilgore said Friday. Other signed bills include a ban on the production and sale of so-called ghost guns, and another that allows those who lose their ability to carry a firearm because of a domestic violence dispute to transfer that gun to an eligible person who does not live in their home. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The Virginia Department of Forestry is warning about a high wildfire risk across the Commonwealth. Patrick Larson with partner station VPM News explains.
The high risk rating accounts for windy, dry, and hot conditions that can carry hot embers over long distances. 3/4 of the state is experiencing moderate to severe drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. Shenandoah National Park issued a fire ban on Monday due to a lack of rain. No open flames are allowed within the park, and the statewide ban on open flames before 4 p.m. is in effect until the end of the month. The Department of Forestry says there are roughly 40 active wildfires in Virginia today. Nearly 5,000 acres have burned already this year.
Patrick Larson reporting. Our forecast calls for unusually high temperatures in the mid to upper 80s today. Lots of sunshine, dry and breezy conditions, and almost no chance of rain. Early evaluations show that the early April cold snap severely damaged apple and peach crops in the northern Shenandoah Valley. The Winchester Star reports that a Frederick County firm's field assessment indicates that the freezing temperatures wiped out 100% of apple blossoms in the Pink Lady and Honeycrisp varieties and 98% in the Gala variety. The report said that among peaches, mortality was 100% in the Sun High variety and about 98% in the Red Haven variety. Two consecutive nights of freezing temperatures with a low of 23 degrees in the early morning on April 8th in the Winchester area brought on the killing frost. Well, early voting is underway for a statewide referendum over proposed congressional district maps in Virginia. WMRE's Randy B. Hagee spoke with about eight candidates for the House of Representatives about the redistricting effort. Here's her introduction to that series of reports.
Virginia's current 11 congressional districts were finalized in 2021. A bipartisan redistricting commission is scheduled to convene again in 2030, but Democratic state legislators have proposed a constitutional amendment that would allow the General Assembly to redraw these maps ahead of this year's midterm elections. That initiative is now being put to all Virginia voters in a referendum. The amendment allows this redraw if another state first conducts their own mid-decade redistricting, which has already happened in Texas and other states at President Donald Trump's behest. According to an analysis by Ballotpedia, six states have enacted new congressional maps ahead of the midterms. Texas, Ohio, North Carolina, and Missouri's new maps are expected to flip nine congressional seats in favor of Republicans, and California's is expected to flip five for Democrats. Utah is under a court order to redraw their maps to include one Democratic-leaning district. Virginia currently has six Democrat and five Republican representatives in the House. The proposed new maps would likely elect 10 Democrats and one Republican. Five of the 11 districts would connect to the Democratic stronghold of Fairfax County, prompting the opposition slogan of "Don't Fairfax Me." A Washington Post Shar School poll from early April indicates the referendum could still go either way. A slim majority of likely voters said they supported redrawing the maps, but Republicans and other opponents were more enthusiastic about casting their ballots. WMRA spoke with eight congressional candidates about their thoughts on redistricting.
And here is the first of Randy's four-part series.
In part one of this series, WMRA spoke with two Democratic candidates from the Roanoke area, Beth Macy and Adam Murphy. Journalist Beth Macy, a former Roanoke Times reporter, has written three New York Times best-selling books about communities left behind by industry and politics. Regardless of the referendum's outcome, she'll be running in the 6th District. Right now, that covers the Shenandoah Valley from Frederick County to Roanoke. If redrawn, it would connect Harrisonburg, Stanton, Waynesboro, Charlottesville, and Roanoke with a ribbon through central Virginia. Macy referred to it as the University District.
I feel very fond of all the colleges, and they're a huge incubator and source of economic development in our region. Education is at the top of my platform. I talk about growing up poor and how going to college saved my life. I think we need to double the Pell Grant. We need to strengthen community college and the pipeline between our local industries and trade schools and community colleges.
Based on WMRA's review of the maps, if the district is redrawn, four-term Republican incumbent Ben Klein would technically live in the new 9th district, but Macy believes he still intends to run in the 6th. The Constitution requires congressmen to live in their state, but not their district. Klein's office did not respond to multiple requests for interviews or clarity on that question. He has consistently won re-election to this seat by at least 60%. By the end of 2025, though, Macy was not far behind him in fundraising. This year's first quarter reports are due on the 15th.
The momentum is with Democrats right now. Abigail won by a landslide, the governor's house. We've seen major upsets going the Democratic way in ruby red places like Texas and Louisiana. I think voters are really concerned about authoritarianism under Donald Trump. And Ben Klein is just a rubber stamp AI bot, ditto, ditto, ditto boy of Donald Trump. And now they've got us in a war. They're being led around by the noses by Benjamin Netanyahu in Iran at a time when Americans are losing their health care. About a third of Americans are in debt because of or suffering to pay back basic health care. Trump wants to spend $85 billion on ICE when we're losing our health care. They can't even explain why we're in this war.
If the districts are redrawn, Macy would face off against former Congressman Tom Perriello in the primary race. His political experience and hefty financial support make him a formidable opponent for the Democratic nomination. Regardless, Macy supports redistricting.
Trump started this with what happened in Texas, encouraging them to gerrymander, and that Virginia has decided to fight back with a vengeance. I think Democrats have to stop showing up to a knife fight with a spork, and this is a perfect example of this.
Down the road, but running in the 9th district, is Adam Murphy. If the Illinois native software engineer wins the Democratic nomination, he'll be running against 8-term Republican incumbent Morgan Griffith, who also did not respond to our interview requests. The 9th District represents Southwest Virginia, and if its lines are redrawn, it would extend northward to include Highland, Bath, Rockbridge, and part of Augusta County. It's the only redrawn district expected to stay red.
It's the size of New Jersey. Before redistricting, it's 20% of the Commonwealth, and if redistricting passes, I think it gets to be like 33% of the Commonwealth.
Murphy is counting on engaging with disenfranchised and new voters to sway the deeply red district.
2 out of every 3 people on average don't vote in the 9th district every midterm. There's roughly 400,000 people that are unreached, unheard, and unseen. Our system does not serve everyday folks. It serves the richest of the rich. And I think people have kind of gotten to a point, you know, regardless of what political ideology you subscribe to, that they've had enough, that they want someone who's going to listen to them, who's going to represent them, and actually go fight for them and their futures.
Murphy's plans for the region include boosting economic activity without compromising the beauty of the mountains.
So ecotourism would be massive. Another big one is, like, let's take Grundy in Buchanan County, just as an example. I really want us using some federal money to complete the airport there, put a chip manufacturing plant, like a computer chip, somewhere in that area. I want to make sure rural broadband is brought to every single part of our district. I want to make sure that things like I-77 and I-81 are 3 lanes the whole way through Southwest Virginia.
He has a tempered view of redistricting.
I think it creates some distrust of government, you know, something that I hear a lot when I go around talking to folks in this area. I understand why the Democratic Party is doing it, and I support that because at the national level, we've had multiple states redistrict mid-census, which none of them should be doing it, but they are. And I appreciate at the bare minimum here in Virginia that it's being put to a vote.
In part 2 of this series, we'll move up the Shenandoah Valley to speak with Pete Barlow and Ken Mitchell. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
You can find the report, plus our overview of the redistricting referendum, and links to lots more information at WMRA.org and on our app. A new state audit found that unclear procedures around intake at the state's mental health care hospitals may put some patients and employees at risk. Dean Mirshahi with partner station VPM News has the details.
Virginia's Inspector General reviewed the intake process for the 9 state-run mental health care facilities that take in people in the criminal justice system who are in need of mental health treatment. The Inspector General's audit found Virginia's Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Services lacks clear policies on how these patients are officially transferred into its custody by law enforcement. According to the audit, without a clear process in place, the state faces increased legal risks. Colleen Miller, Executive Director of the Disability Law Center of Virginia, says transferring a patient can create a dangerous situation.
It's a very dangerous moment, and we have seen where the uncertainty around who is in charge at that moment has resulted in the death of individuals with mental illness.
The department says it plans to establish a statewide policy by next year.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. Finally today, a report by Virginia's Auditor of Public Accounts looked into controls over state agencies' compliance in administering grant money and financial reporting, among other items. Radio IQ's Dave Cantor has more on the findings.
More than a dozen findings involved issues with how federal grants were being handled. The Department of Social Services, for instance, had issues monitoring subrecipients of Medicaid grant funding, resulting in its leadership not receiving quarterly updates on the program's implementation. Apart from financial controls, a number of findings were connected to digital system security at 16 state agencies, public universities, and their affiliated hospitals. And about 1/4 of those, quote, relate to managing or removing access to significant systems. That's removing an employee's access after they're terminated or leave their position. Milos Manich is the director of Virginia Commonwealth University's Cybersecurity Center. He called the IT issues huge.
Those that know that are insiders actually know the weak point, and that's actually way more an issue than in many cases than in case of external actors. So it is a big issue. Even if it's a small percentage, the risk is so high because they actually know the system really well.
A spokesperson for the Virginia Information Technologies Agency pointed to state code spelling out duties of the state's chief information officer. That language explains that the CIO will provide guidance to state agencies in order for their leadership to implement appropriate security measures. In a statement, Michael Watson, VITA's chief information security officer, said, quote, "We are grateful for audits like these because if gaps are identified, they can be addressed." This year's audit also indicated several state agencies resolved IT issues first identified in 2023. I'm Dave Cantor.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.